Okay, here we are back in some form of action. Thank you for your humor. So I was, before I was rudely interrupted by a looping mic, I was going to read you a little bit about from this article called Mastering the Mind and Body, Conscious Control of the Autonomic Nervous System. So the autonomic nervous system is breath. It's also peristalsis. Peristalsis is what moves, is the it's the movement, muscular movement of the intestines, okay? We're not supposed to be able to control the breath, nor are we supposed to be able to control peristalsis. And I want to tell you that I did control peristalsis. It took me many, many years, but I did. So I want to say that because, and in lieu of this little article that I'm going to read, or part of the article that I'm going to read you, don't doubt yourself. When I was not well, long, you know, when I first started to practice, I looked for anything that would give me hope that I could work with my body. And one of the things, you know, and I had been practicing yoga quite a long time, and that wasn't really helping. And then I started to meditate on my own. At that point, I didn't know that it was helping or not, because I was just doing it on my own. Then I started joining classes and such, but I started to find stories that were written by some of the Siddha yogis, the wild yogis, either from India or Tibet, and would read about them, you know, flying through the air or creating such inner heat called tummo that they could dry wet towels on their bodies up in the Himalayas. These really wild practices that, you know, showed what control they had over their bodies. So both from India and Tibet, and I'm sure other places too, but those are the stories that I sought out and I got inspired. And I thought, well, if they can do that, I'm not saying I'm that much, you know, adept practitioner, but why don't I just see what I can do? And then I worked with the energy, like I'm describing partially to you, and with my own mind, and in many, many, many retreats. And I did, that took a few years. I'm not going to tell you how long, because then you think, oh, it'll take me that long or not that long, whatever. Everybody's time is their own. But I did do substantial change in my body, in the autonomic nervous system. So in this, I'll just read you from this article. They say, since the times of the Greek physician Hippocrates, the mind has been believed to play a significant influence on physiological processes, from stress and tension to health and disease. It's no surprise that attempts to master this connection between mind and body has been an active pursuit for millennia. In fact, you've most probably heard of seemingly superhuman individuals who can regulate body temperature, withstand extreme pain, or control their heart rate. It may be more than we think. How much control do we really have? And then they start going through some of the things that human beings can do and have done. He said, well, involuntary physiological processes are usually outside the realm of conscious control. I like that word, usually. Evidence suggests that these processes, through regulation of the autonomic nervous system, can be voluntarily controlled. One of the things that you might have experienced, I'm speaking not from the article, but to you directly, is goosebumps. You've experienced goosebumps, goose pimples, whatever you call them. Yes? When the little hairs raise on your arm? Okay. Can you make that happen now? Okay. Now you might say, Jill, why would you even ask us to do that? That's so silly. It's not really. I'll tell you a brief story. So when I was close with this teacher, Sopni Rinpoche, for many years, I taught him privately yoga. He didn't know anything about yoga. He knew Tibetan yogas, but he didn't know Hatha yoga. And so I taught him, and because he was just sort of looking for a stress release, I think. And his body was quite tight, actually. He didn't do a lot of physical stuff. And then I would teach the yogis on the retreat. You know, so this is years after I'd already started teaching mindful movement on retreat. So he was a teacher that came to me probably 15 years after I'd been already practicing. Once in a while, he'd say, do you have any questions for me? And I'd be like, oh, no, Rinpoche, this is your time. You know, you're constantly being asked questions and everybody wants a little bit of your teaching all the time. And let's just, you know, use this time is for you. I don't need to ask questions. I was being a little too humble about it. But anyway, he said, well, you talk about moving breath around the body when teaching the movement classes. And he says, like, you know, you say, well, breathe into your kidneys or breathe over here or relax this area by plumping it up and breathing in there, you know. So he would actually tease me. He'd say, you know, he'd be teaching and he'd say, and Jill says, breathe into your kidneys. And then he started asking me, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, I think you know what I mean, but this is what I mean. I explained to him kind of what we're doing here. And I said, you know what I mean. I mean, he's a Tibetan Lama, right? A very advanced practitioner. And he said, yeah, I know what you mean. And so he had his robe on and he rolls the sleeve up and he puts his arm out like this so I can see it. Excuse me. And as he's pointing to his arm, goosebumps and hair go up. And when his finger leaves a particular area, it goes back down. So he's doing this. I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean. He had that much control. Now, I can raise the goosebumps on my arm. I have to focus a little bit, but I can. Getting them to go back down, I've never been able to figure that one out. But at any rate, you might say, okay, again, so what? You know, big deal. Are you going to go to a cocktail party? You go, what? It's conscious control of the autonomic nervous system. You should feel proud of that if that happens. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into that of communication between the mind and body. A lot of practice. That's, I think, pretty great. So voluntary goosebumps, they're just an outward symbol that you've started to really be in sync. Mind body is really gotten in sync. Other things that people do, I've not been able to do this, is create heat, inner heat called tumo. And that's when they dry towels. So they put wet towels on their bodies. The monks, probably the nuns, but the monastics would put have contests and be up in the very freezing mountains, and they put a wet towel on their body, and whoever could heat the towel and dry it first won the contest. But there's all sorts of stories about tumo. There's a man who's a little controversial, I believe he's controversial, named Wim Hof. You might have heard of him, talking about extreme cold. So there are different things that we can do. I would stick with goosebumps. But just to illustrate that there are more things that we can actually have control of than we might have heard or been taught. And so hopefully these practices that we're doing are opening doors for you to experiment and see that there is no limit to the sky. And as long as we're not clinging to an expectation, an outcome, or a goal, then why not try something? If it's helpful, if we're not doing it to gain some sort of power or control over someone else, or to brag, it's not harmful, then I think it's empowering to experiment with what we can do between the conscious communication of heart, mind, and body. Because remember that the Buddha taught mind, body, mind, body, mind, body. So nama, rupa, nama, rupa. And nama, mind, also translates as materiality. I'm sorry, mentality, excuse me. Just inverted that. Mentality. So mind is mentality. It's the mental form of consciousness. Rupa, body, is materiality. The material form of consciousness. Is one better than another? Do they constantly communicate? Yes. Do we know one more than another? Most likely. Can we know both? Absolutely. Absolutely. So remember again that imagination and a lot of these practices have invited us to imagine something. Imagination actually has a physiological response. Again, as long as we're not clinging to or attached to, it has to be a certain way. Like I'm all of a sudden going to, change the form of my body, or even dissolve the form of my body. Change the form of my body so everybody can see that. That's a little, over the top. And if it doesn't happen, then there's all sorts of suffering going on around that. So you can experiment without having to have an expectation or a solid goal. You can experiment, see what happens. If it doesn't go exactly the way you want, that's okay. You can try again. You can try something else. So what we're looking at here is just the attachment factor of whatever it is that we're experimenting with. So remember that attachment, clinging, which also means aversion, creates suffering, creates dis-ease, stress, discomfort, etc. Okay. So if you can experiment without having to have a grip of a goal, then I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised at what can transpire. If it has to have a goal, you limit yourself and you create suffering. Make sense? Okay. I'm going to pause here and all right. So I'd like to do a little interactive practice next, and then a practice that you'll go in and see how that might have, well, how it might connect with the interactive practice that you'll do. So this can be interesting to think of practice as not having a stop and start necessarily, or a hard stop, hard start. But the more we do any kind of practice, the more we embody it. And when we embody something, it's just we become one with it. And so it is part of us and how we will be internally and externally, in the world. And I think most practice, all practice really, at least the Dharma practice that I know, is meant to be very practical and accessible and livable. So it's not just doing it while we're on a cushion or a chair or maybe lying down somewhere, but it's how to have access to insight to the mind and really benefit from the insights that we have in formal practice, but also as importantly in informal practice. And so when we started earlier, I asked you to turn your gaze downwardly and see if you could notice where your breath was. And that's so that you eventually will be able to walk around and be in life and be able to feel what's going on internally as you're moving about, doing whatever you're doing, or receiving whatever you're receiving, like a conversation or the news, perhaps. That's how I practiced a few years back. And it just becomes less of, oh, now I'm practicing, now I'm not. It just becomes of, becomes more of, hey, I'm aware. I'm just aware. And so our awareness expands. So this is a practice that will involve a repeated question. And you, probably a lot of you have done this already. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to explain what we're going to do. And then for anyone that's joining online and or listening to this later, you can do the exact same thing, but you can write it in a journal. So you're not speaking it out loud, but you're speaking it, so, you know, so to speak, to yourself in a journal and still being able to sense what's arising, what's coming up for you. So a lot of times, you know, not everybody likes doing interactive practice. And so I always offer that as an alternative. You can always write things down and do it that way. There's something a little bit, there's an added dynamic, obviously, when you're working with somebody else. But both are really good. Both are really informative. So we'll have two questions that will be repeated one at a time. And so I'll break you up into two people in one room, or you'll be writing this question for yourself if you're doing it at home by yourself. And let me wait and tell you what the question is. You don't want too much anticipation. But what you'll do is one person will agree to be the person that asks the question, and then the other person will be responding. And so you'll ask the question, and the person will respond, and then you say thank you, and then you ask the question again, and the person will respond, and you say thank you, and you ask the question again, and you keep doing that for 4 minutes. And then we'll pause, and I ask you not to talk, but just pause and settle and notice in the body, and then you switch. So the other person that was responding is going to be asking the question. So you're asking the question pretty much in the same intonation over and over, but you could change it up a little bit. But what I'd like you to try not to do is respond or ask with body language, because this is all, it's a little bit more challenging for someone to sense their own responses to either what's being said or what's being heard. If somebody else is very actively kind of involved in, you know, giving some sort of body language that is just the same as saying something, basically. So we're not answering each other. It's not a conversation. It's a repeating question. And when you're listening, you don't have to be like a piece of wood, but, you know, just be aware of your body language and be as neutral-ish as you can be. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay, good. All right. So I will break you out into a room.
Jill, excuse me. Are you going to throw up warnings like 4 minute switch, or you want us to keep our own time?
Oh, no, I'll do that for you.
Okay.
Yes. I will do that. Okay. So just stop, pause the recording. And then for those of you who are watching or listening later, we will repeat the questions when we come back as a group. I will say the questions when everybody's in the group so that you can be working at it at the same time, or, you know, maybe later, however that works out for you. But let me stop the recording right now. Should have said recording in progress. No, I didn't hear that. I did? Okay. I had my volume down. Welcome back. So for those of you who will be trying this exercise on your own, the first question was, what stands in the way of joy? And so you would write it down and then answer or respond to yourself over and over again in the course of about 40 minutes, however long you'd like to do it. But the longer that we repeat the question, generally speaking, the deeper we go. It's just like any kind of reflection. And then the second question was, what brings you joy? And so there are different ways that you probably experienced that in your body, both saying it and listening. So why don't we share a little bit about that and see if you recognized how that was. Oh, did you guys get to switch? So without sharing what somebody said to you, without, you know, sharing anything that was personal or that you didn't ask could be shared, just out of honoring confidentiality, please share what you noticed, what you found interesting about that particular exercise. Just raise your hand so I can see who's going to go. Monica and then Eva. Great.
It was a lot more joyful to talk about what brings joy.
Okay.
And it just felt good in the body. It felt light and uplifting.
Uh-huh. Were you able to notice it in areas or was
it? Yeah, smile, just like a light energy. I don't know, it's hard to explain, but it felt really good in my body.
Okay.
It was more calm. I was smiling more. It just felt more alive in that one.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Eva?
Yes, it was. We did this in the MMTCP, by the way. It was difficult to ask the question repeatedly because I felt like I was telling the person, tell me the truth. I can't believe you, tell me the truth again.
Okay.
I felt mean. And when I did the first exercise, what stands in the way, which I felt ear burning, like between the neck and the chest. It was burning as hell.
You were asking or you were listening?
No, answering. When I was answering, yeah. And also instead when what brings you joy, it was very nice, very uplifting, and it's strange because the things that I said bring me joy are things that I think about a lot, right? But usually when I think about them, I don't necessarily connect with the sense of joy. But when I was doing the exercise, I don't know, probably because I was telling someone else, I know I felt all giggly and open, I don't know, almost like feeling the things that I was talking about more,
mm-hmm,
compared to just, you know, thinking them in my mind.
Right. That's great. That's excellent. I think I just want to point one thing out that's intriguing that you said, aside from all of it. Well, intriguing in a different way, I should say, is that you felt you were mean to ask someone that question, what stands in the way. So you might want to just let that linger in there. Yeah. Because, yeah. It's just let that roll around in your awareness as to why you think it's mean to ask someone like that, so a question like that. I mean, I'm not saying there is an answer, but just to be, inquire about it could be interesting for you.
I'll do. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Kristen, and then Marie-France, and then Natasha. So Kristen, Marie-France, Natasha.
I just, the energetics were so different, and it reminded me of the walking practice of walking towards someone that you love.
Yeah.
There was just such a, for me, like this sense of like downtrodden, like downward gaze, like shame with the first question, as if like, I'm wrong to be experiencing these things. Not that I am, right? Mm-hmm. And then the energetics of the second practice of thinking about joy, of just, it cultivating, like just thinking, turning mm-hmm. the mind towards joy shifts the energy of the body, right? And if you turn the mind towards, what is not joyful, the energy of the body is not going to be joyful and feel good. So I'm just aware of that. And I also just thought about what it would be like to really sit with this for a while and do it as a writing prompt, mm-hmm. because I think it could just get into these really just like specific nuanced answers.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah.
It does indeed. And it, this kind of reflection practice also is really good to do on retreat. And that's how I learned it. And I'll tell you about it once I hear from everybody. So thank you. Marie-France, you want to go next? And then Natasha?
Yes. what I really like was doing that with another person, with Natasha.
Uh-huh.
And I love the listening and I love the sharing. And I thought that being together and sincerely, there was a sincerity which was extremely supportive and mm-hmm. kind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And of course, it was easier to speak about what brings joy. but at the same time, what stops the joy was like brought some kindness toward me. Oh, there is all this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a sense of kindness, and for the person and for me as well.
Right.
And so I appreciate the exercise.
Excellent. Thank you. Natasha.
So I felt very affected by hearing Marie-France talk about what blocks her joy.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very moved by it. I mean, I felt sort of tears, I wanted to, and I thought, no, I can't do that. but I found it actually a very beautiful experience witnessing her vulnerability and having the privilege of being a witness to that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, having that sense of her sorrows and my sorrows, it's the sorrows, had that feeling that we're in it together. And I felt a sense of connection to her in that vulnerable place,
Right. Yeah.
Thank you, Marie-France.
Thank you. Anybody else? Holly?
I echo what everyone has said so far. It was there's a lot of depth, and it was a very challenging and beautiful experience. And I think that I was really surprised at the amount of similarities my partner and I had, even though there's a lot of things I didn't say, mm-hmm. things that she did say, I was like, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah, I didn't say that, but yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of, you know, again, like I think what Natasha just said about that sort of shared sorrows and shared joys, like it did felt very, very vulnerable and connected. So that was really, yeah. So thank you.
That's great. Thanks. Hey, Car.
Thank you for that, Jill. And I thank the other Jill as well, my partner, Jill. Yeah, I just found in terms of the process that I was connecting to my own breath. And I think at some level, I was connecting to her breath, or we were trying to slow the pace and allow for spaciousness between the question and the answer. So I noticed that in how we were both approaching it. And I was really deeply connecting to compassion and self-compassion, especially with the first question, and also the sense of common humanity. These are the themes that other people have raised too, but just it was a beautiful experience because it was so human. It was so real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it's amazing. I think what can be increasingly interesting to experience, inquire about, and to refine is we will get a sense of overall sensations. Joy as opposed to what stands in the way of joy, two very distinct feelings. But within those distinct sort of, in the landscape of those feelings is a lot of little different towns and cities, let's say, for lack of a better way of saying that. And so as you do things like this, or you're just even listening to someone, the way that you might refine this awareness is by paying particular attention to where in the body something shows up, how it shows up, how long it lasts. So first we get this overall tone that you're experiencing. That's great. I mean, just even to bring attention to that is excellent, because when we bring attention to an overall tone, then we have a choice. Am I going to stay in this? I'm going to fuel the fire, or, oh, this is not helpful for me, for the person I'm with, for anyone. And so I'm going to turn towards something else. Now, this is not bypassing. This is making kind, self-compassionate choices. Okay. Because if we're not noticing the mood or the resonance or the sensations, the somatic expression, as I like to call it, of the body, then we can't do anything about it. And it just continues to express and take us somewhere, because the body will take the heart mind somewhere. And if we continue to allow the same conditioning to happen over and over time, over again, like when I hear this kind of question, or when someone says this, and we are continually going back to the same place over and over again, because of our history, for instance, then we lose choice in that too. So being able to distinguish in the moment what we're sensing and where is really helpful. And being able to say to ourselves in the moment, more and more, this will happen for you. Oh, I feel this here. Let me soften my shoulder. And then that'll help to release the thoughts and feelings that are mounting because of the sensations or the body signaling. So remember that the body senses before the mind cognizes. So hopefully that makes sense. So refine your awareness to notice more and more overall, yes, and then more specifics as you go along. Like I played with this watching the news years and years ago. I wanted to see exactly where the news at that time was going into my body, how it was making my body respond. It was really interesting. Really interesting. Yeah, Marie France.
So are you saying that if you do not really spend time analyzing what you feel in your body, but you access a place of acceptance and compassion and kindness, are you saying it is absolutely necessary to consciously go through the body before you access kindness and acceptance?
No, not necessarily, because it's a good question. It's better is a terribly loaded word, isn't it? If you can access the body first and release the parts of the body that are starting to contract, because that's generally what you'll feel in an unpleasant emotion, or like, you know, what stands in the way of joy is unpleasant to think about and talk about and to listen to, right? So you'll generally find that anything that's unpleasant or uncomfortable has a contraction somewhere, or a few places even. There's a contraction. If you work or respond or are in that area or those areas and release the contraction, it doesn't make your heart mind go into, oh, well, this is going to be like this. It was always like that before. And just all this discursive thinking where you're not even in the present moment anymore. But you can go the other way, the other direction. Oh, geez, that question just set me way off into the future, or set me way back into my past because it reminded me of something else. And then check into your body and know where that was. Generally, we notice the heart mind first, the thoughts and emotions first, and then we can start to get to know the body. But in reality, it's the body that's expressing first, and then the mind actually cognizes it.
Okay, but you don't need to fix the body sensations. Where there is tightness, for example, in your heart or in your throat, you don't need to stop there and you feel it, but you don't need to fix it.
Well, that's an interesting question, because fix, no. Address, yes. So
observe.
Observe and even address. So some of the things that, yes, and address, because some of the things that we're practicing with here are how to apply skillful means to work with what is. So you can observe a tight throat, for instance, and know why that's happening. And you can also soothe the throat and release what's happening. Especially in cases where it's been conditioned that every time someone asks you this particular kind of question that your parent used to ask you when you were young, creates a tightness in the throat. It doesn't necessarily have to do with what's being asked now. It has to do with how it was for you when you were younger. But because it's conditioned in the body, heart, mind, the same coping skill will come up where you're tightening the throat. Well, what if you release the throat kindly? I sense this, I'm going to breathe into it, I'm going to relax the root of my tongue. You know, there's a variety of ways we can do that. And that way, you don't have to keep going into the same conditioning over and over again. You can stop, you can release it, and you can actually listen to the question as if it had never been asked before. See, so many things that we hear, think, see, smell, taste, whatever, they have history attached to them. That's why we have the perceptions and the opinions and the conditioning that we do. So if we want to be able to be with what is now, just now, then we need to be aware of when things come with it. And when things come with something, like this reminds me of when my parents used to say that, and it always sends me to the same place and it's not helpful, then we want to stop, see if we can address it kindly, breathe into it, release the stress in the body, and therefore release the habit, at least a lot.
So you said something important. You said be with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's different from saying, okay, I'm going to release my throat and I am, you know, going to...
Not really, because there's different ways of doing that, if I'm understanding. I know I just cut you off. because this is an interesting line of thought that I'm really glad that you're talking about. Being with can melt the tissue, right? It depends. But being with can also be judgmental and not have any skillful means to release the memory in the tissue. Does that make sense? This is where I think it gets really interesting. So sometimes turning awareness somewhere purposefully, I mean, it will always change something. Awareness changes everything. We know that even from quantum physics. But sometimes we also need to add kind awareness, some self-soothing, some acceptance, some releasing, some softness to actually change the pattern of it. So there's mindfulness. In mindfulness, we're taught to be with the way things are, or at least that's what we're working towards. But we're also hoping to gain the skillful means and the insights and the ways in which we can open to be with everything more and more. And being with everything means that sometimes we got to put our hand here and say, wow, that hurts. Let me relax. Let me take a breath, for instance. I don't like what somebody is saying to me. That reminds me of how this used to happen to me all the time. Stop, soothe, reevaluate. Is it true now? Is that really happening now? No, this is different. Okay, let it out, let it go. So it really kind of depends on what it is, how you're responding or reacting to it, and whether or not you really can sense that it's a harmful habit, let's say. Does that help?
Yeah.
So there's two aspects. One is being with, and sometimes that's enough. But in deep conditioning, it's not usually. In deep conditioning, especially of patterns of trauma, it's not enough just to notice. We want to respond kindly.
Yeah.
Right? It's a phenomenal line of question. Thank you. Did you want to follow it up with, I promise I won't cut you off. Was there something else? Marie-France?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, I'm sorry.
So sorry.
There's something else that you wanted to add?
No. I to be with kindness is exactly what I feel is right.
Yes, excellent. And then sometimes it takes a little bit of method too, like breathing into or putting your
hand. That comes spontaneously, because when the kindness is there, it's going to come.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Natasha?
Thanks, Jill. So today I looked up the Asian character for mindfulness, because I used to study Japanese. So I was just really curious about looking at it myself. And maybe you'll probably know this, but I was really fascinated to actually see it for myself, that it, you know, it's got two bits to it, and the top bit means now. And then the second bit, like these four little dots, one is longer than the other, it means heart, kokoro in Japanese, heart. So it's just what you're saying, Jill, that when we know what's happening, if we bring the heart to it, that's the thing you've been saying, isn't it? Whereas when we use the word mindfulness, it doesn't seem to have the heart in it.
It can be devoid of that. And I'm not saying that you guys are pulling that out and making it clinical and concentrative, but a lot of times that is how it's presented and taught and what we think. So when you listen, you know, or are with Buddhist teachers, Dharma teachers, they don't ever separate the kindness, the loving awareness, from awareness, ever. It's more, and then kind of the newer forms of mindfulness that it's become a little bit more about concentration or more clinically seeing things. And there's also been, and it's changed now, it's changed, fortunately, it's changed. There's been the suggestion for many decades, really, that we are aware without judgment. And that used to really bother me, because how do we become aware without judgment? That was never really explained. And in order, when we hear, oh, I need to be aware of the present moment without judgment, as the definition came out originally, without any ways to be aware without judgment, really, you know, it was just a statement for the most part, unless you took the course and maybe it was revealed then, but just gave fuel for criticism, self-criticism. Well, I'm not aware without judgment. I am judging myself. And so what's wrong with me? So these kinds of practices, I think, are an antidote to that specifically. You know, because if you bring the body is what feels. The body is what feels. So you bring your body in and you're going to feel more, but you can also address better what you're feeling. So it's not just a top-down thing like, oh, I think I'm feeling this. But I'm feeling this. There's some tightness. Feeling sad. Okay, I'm not trying to push away sadness, but can I make room for sadness? Yeah, I can be with that. I can be with that. And more of the time, if we work in the somatic aspect of knowing, remember that's the material form of consciousness, then we can be with in a way that's entirely different than just the thinking mind, and complements and is the thinking mind in combination with everything else. So these somatic type practices are the heart. Recognizing the heart and how it expresses itself in the body. Recognizing how thoughts express themselves in the body. So it's not enough to say, okay, well, I've had this really bad experience and I know I shouldn't. I shouldn't have. And I don't want to, okay, so now I'm aware of it. It should go away. And we ask that of ourselves in lots of different subtle ways. And what I'm suggesting is don't approach your body, not the thinking mind with it. Approach the history, the conditioning, the contracting, even if it doesn't have history to it. Approach the body with kindness. And it changes everything. So it can be very powerful. It's not easy necessarily, but the more soft and capacious we are, the more we can hold what is, even when it's really, really, really difficult. Really difficult. Really difficult. So that's partially what we're learning to do. Recognize, be with, sense, feel, be kind, love, soften, relax, all of those kinds of things are involved with just being internally aware. So I wanted to just share a little story about this kind of reflection practice, repetitive question practice. When I first learned it, it was on retreat with my teacher, Ajahn Amaro, outside of London. And maybe it wasn't him, someplace else, but anyway, it was on retreat with him. And the way he teaches this kind of reflection practice is once you've been on retreat a day or two and your mind has gotten a little bit quiet, or three, depending on you, then you drop a proverbial or a metaphoric pebble down, down, down into the pond, so to speak. And so the pebble represents whatever you want to work with or be with or explore or inquire or reflect around. So one year, the example that he gave, I thought was pretty striking, and that's why I remember it. It was drop the pebble in, so you're quiet, and you drop in the pebble that says mom. And then it goes to the bottom of your consciousness, or as close as it's going to get for then. And then bubbles come up, and you watch, you listen, you observe, and then you do it again, mommy. And then things come up, and you watch, you observe, you sense your mom's name, Connie, you know, and then Mrs. Satterfield, and then you do it again, and you do it again. And every time you do it, you see more. And when you're in retreat, especially, or you could be doing this on your own too, but it shows you some of the more suppressed, repressed responses, reactions, and sensations that we generally kind of get away without noticing. But if we don't notice something, it haunts us. Or it colors us. And if we can be with what is more and more of the time, with kindness and acceptance and love and generosity, you know, this is another aspect of being human. Then we can release and liberate that which binds us, little by little, little by little, little by little. And I highly recommend that if it is something that's traumatic, that you do it with someone else. I do not recommend doing it on your own. Do it with someone that's skilled in working in the body. So that's why, you know, if you wanted to teach these kinds of things, you just have to, you know, context is very important. Community is very important. The ways in which you present them, these kinds of things, are very important. And you might choose different kinds of questions because of that. But for you guys, I know you're longtime practitioners, so we're going kind of right in there a little bit. Kristen? I want to save time for one more practice too.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to just drop this in as a little, because I think most of us are aware of the practice of rain.
Uh-huh.
And to me, there's a correlate, like there could be the somatic rain practice.
Well, there absolutely
is. To me sounds like what you're talking about.
Similar. Yeah. Except for that. Rain, for most people, rain is a linear, progressive sense of the way things arise. And the way things arise is not linear and progressive. So yes, it's similar in inquiry, for sure. And you're sensing it in the body, yeah. But it's not, okay, first I'm going to recognize, then I'm going to accept, then I'm going to investigate, and then I'm going to nurture. It could be you nurture first, and then you recognize. So the way in which we work with ourselves is very, very important. And knowing that you can switch that around is important too. Because our minds, our bodies, our hearts, they all learn slightly differently. And if you apply kindness, 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 love, self-compassion, acceptance, you know, however that comes to you, you know, generosity towards yourself a lot, then you do recognize, accept, and you can investigate more easily. So it really just depends on each of us to eventually use the RAIN practice or something similar, a practice of inquiry, and do it in a way that just makes more sense or makes sense. If it's that way, R-A-I-N, that's great. If it's N-I-A-R, that's fine. This is one of the benefits of dyscalculia and dyslexia is I can read backwards. So, but it can also be A-I-R-N, you know, who knows? Yeah, but it is similar. You're right. It is similar. So for those people who are listening to this later, RAIN is a practice that was started by Michelle McDonald and has been championed by Tara Brach. And it's that you're recognizing, accepting, investigating, and nurturing what is arising. Nurturing can also, has also in the past been said as not identifying or non-identifying. That's a little bit trickier sometimes. But nurturing always helps. So thank you. Even if you do those practices, there are this kind of repetitive question thing a lot. I think there's always something in there, you know, because we're so deep. We've had long lives and we're not always awake. And certainly we weren't always awake when we were young. We didn't know. You know, so many things are developed over time, starting from when we're very small people, trying to cope, trying to hang in there, you know, doing our best, just doing our best. And then eventually we can know, well, yes, okay, I adopted this coping skill, whatever it is, for very, very good reasons. Thank you very much. It served me well. And I'd like to let it go now so I can be lighter, more free, more unencumbered. And I think that's an integral, very important part of the spiritual path is letting go sounds easy, but it's a very lovingly taken path of cultivation and process. Hopefully loving me. So thank you for everything that you shared. Really, I think it's helpful to hear other people's experience. Really, really helpful. So this will be available and you can skip by it if you don't want to listen to it again in the recording. So with some of the time that we have left, I want to guide you into a practice that was very spontaneous for me. I was never taught this. It just started to happen. And then because of how it worked for me, I started teaching it. And I've been doing this practice in a variety of ways for probably 35 years. Attribution is lovely with this practice. I hear it all the time now, all over the place. And I really did make this one up. So this will take about 20 minutes. It'll be about 20 minutes. So that means if you wanted to lie down, you're totally welcome to, or just get into a position that's comfortable for you for around that amount of time. And this practice is called the body as house. So invite your body. Invite your body to rest. Lean back, lean into, rest on whatever it is that's supporting you. So not lean in, but lean back if you want. Be supported. Be physically supported. And take a couple of longer, slower breaths just to establish breath awareness, but also just to do a little refresh between what we were just doing and what we're about to do. It's a very nice habit, in a sense, to get into, taking some breaths and starting again. And then imagine that your body is your house. How you imagine this to be is going to be up to you. But what I suggest is that the house element of your body is from the top of your neck to the pelvic floor. Only because there are more sensations and things stashed away, if you will, in the torso rather than the head and the limbs. It's more the lived site of feelings from the neck down to the pelvic floor and up. And so as you envision your house, see if you can just take a look around and notice what kind of shape it is or what it looks like on the outside. You might even notice the environment that it's in. Could be a city, could be the beach, the forest, the mountains. Where do you picture your house, your home to be? And then imagine that you can go inside your house. And this is what we've been practicing with inner awareness. We're just going to place a little more specific images around our inner awareness. So as you move internally inside, is there an area of your body, if it is indeed your house, that feels very bright and light? Like maybe it gets the most sunlight. Is there an area of your body / house that feels like it has the most breeze? Windows are open. There's a lot of circulation. Is there an area of your body / house that feels crowded? Maybe a closet area that has too much in it. Is there an area of your body, your house, where you can imagine and even sense that you've stashed away all your childhood toys and memories? Where would that be in your body? And if anything becomes too uncomfortable, then skip it. You can open your eyes. You can move to a place of more comfort. Is there a part of your house or an area where your parents, parents of origin, parents of choice, where they come to stay? Or maybe they live there fairly permanently. Is there an area of the house that just feels dark, avoidable? You know it's there, but you don't want to go into it. Is there an area or place in your house that you'd love to have repaired? And if so, what would you ask for help with? And if you were to just assess or walk around as if you'd be inspecting, like we are, can you open the windows in most, if not all, of the rooms? Or where might you not be able to do that yet? And as you imagine opening the windows, you might try actually breathing in those areas and see if it actually can have some breeze or some wind or air. Might not yet, but try. And then see if you can find the place that you'd like to be. Where's the most comfortable area of your body house? Where you feel completely safe. You can stretch out. You can be who you are. And you can even invite people to come in and hang out with you. It's that great of a place or an area. See if you can find a place like that in your body and rest your attention there. Just occupy it. Occupy it with your mind attention, but also occupy it with your breath. Maybe make it a little cozier, making it softer, even a little bigger. You can decorate it. You can move around the furniture. Whatever you think is helpful. Imagine if you have found a comfortable place in your house, your home, your body, that you can look out and see everything. There's this great vista, parabolic vista available to you from that place. You can observe, you can be with from this very safe, very comfortable place. At least for moments at a time. It can be a place of refuge. Private, kind space of refuge. So from this space in your body, see if you can be within it, held within it safely. You're contained, but you're also very able to hear all the sounds around you. And because this place is comfortable, sounds don't need to cause any disturbance. But you can just listen. As if a sound moves through the sky, it doesn't change the sky. Maybe you can also see from this space. You'll see things internally with your eyes closed. And whatever you see can also be allowed to come and go, like watching a bird fly through the sky and watching an airplane fly through the sky, both okay. The sky is still the sky. And maybe you can feel things from this place. Lots of different things, like the sky holding different weather patterns. They'll come through. And then once they move through, you're back to just being the sky. So sometimes we can feel our feelings without having them move us into any kind of danger or to shut down around them. But we can just notice them like weather patterns, at least once in a while. And if we can continue to find refuge somewhere when we need it, then we don't have to be knocked about by any of the winds. We might sense them, of course, but they don't need to carry us away, at least not as long and maybe not as far. And so remember, if you have found a space inside your house, your body, your home, that you can go there and find refuge when you need to. You can make it cozy with breath. You can soften it by letting go of tissue. You can imagine it beautiful and light. You can even invite friends to share that space with you and enjoy their company as they do yours. So know that this body, house, maybe home, is temporary. We have it for a time, and then we won't. We're not sure exactly. We might have belief about where we go next, if we go anywhere, but this is where we're living now. This is our material form of consciousness. Let's see if we can abide in it more and more fully and kindly and lightly and lovingly. And not just treat it as something that gets us around, but as a treasure trove of insight and feelings and memories and skillful means in which to release, understand, inquire, be awake. So let your next couple of breaths be a little bit more sweeping through as much as you can. And then when you feel ready, let your eyes very gently, softly open again. So that the way we embody our bodies is always changing, always. Although there are places of memory in the tissue. That's how it goes. Our tissues hold memory. And so it's not enough just to think about letting something go. We actually have to somatically let it go as well in order for it to be complete. But it's constantly changing and rearranging, constantly, with all our new experience and with all our lived experience, our wisdom, our discernment, our awareness, our kind awareness of when things are arising, so that more and more we're not able to, or we're able to not continue to condition the body, heart, mind in ways that aren't helpful. And over time, we can decondition the body, heart, mind in ways that are more livable and have more ease and are more free. All of this takes attention, and all of this takes kindness. Patience, process, kindness, or, you know, the willingness to take things as process, not decisions. Everything is a process. We don't just decide, unfortunately, sometimes. So the way in which you occupy or don't your body right now is the way in which you are right now. And with imagination, you can really create some interesting change. But try creating interesting change in the places that aren't scary for you. Not yet. So we want to be attuned to what is stashed and stored in our bodies. Know about it, but not necessarily walk into it right now. It's good to know there's an area that's a little bit off limits, where you haven't visited in a long time, you can't even imagine. And when the time is right, maybe you go in there with some companionship and some spiritual guidance. So when I started this, you know, when this practice just kind of came to me, and just to share that when it did, the area of my body below my navel was where I was in intense pain, and I had a lot of illness, and it was a dark hole. I couldn't feel it. I mean, except for pain, I could feel pain there, like intense pain. Other than that, no other kind of sensation. I couldn't see anything in there. It was just dark, like I said. I couldn't breathe into my belly for a really long time. I couldn't get my breath down there. And this is after having practiced yoga practice for many, many, many years. Many years, a decade probably. So, and teaching yoga as well. So I share that with you because, you know, we all are on different timelines. And we can't compare. And, you know, there's always something new to be aware of, honestly. Either it's just starting now and we can be aware of it, or it started a few days ago and we can be aware of it, or it started when we were little. And now we're slowly becoming aware of it. But it's always, you know, it can be intriguing, hopefully, and done with some really kind curiosity, because everything that we notice is not just personal, it's transpersonal. It's not that different than what somebody else will feel or sense or think. It's not that different. It has our own story with it, but our stories are even somewhat similar. So if we don't take everything personally and don't blame ourselves for everything that we notice, if we know that a lot of things that have been conditioned in the mind, heart, body, happened before we were able to be aware of conditioning even, then it's an act of kindness to just greet what's conditioned and do what we can when we can to liberate the conditioning. And really seriously, just to liberate the heart. But it takes time. It takes time. So with this practice, what I suggest, if you wanted to do it again, and don't, if it didn't appeal to you, really, it's not that important in the scheme of things. No practice is in the scheme of things, really. If it's uncomfortable and you don't want to do it, put it aside. Maybe a year from now you will. But if you do it again, I suggest lying down and just taking your time. The interesting aspect of what's called introspection, which is also what we're doing when we practice inner awareness, is that inner awareness, introspection, needs a sustained amount of time to really start to have the eyes open in a dark room, being able to see in a room that's dark. And that, so mindfulness is being able to stay somewhere for maybe a little bit longer than a moment or two, right? So we have sustained attention. And then if you combine that with inner awareness, that's when things can transform. So often I will imagine that, or I was imagining that I would pull up a chair and I'd be in the room below my navel and it was dark and I would just sit there. Not expecting anything, not trying to change anything, but just having my presence in that area of my body. And I would do that lying down. And I would also sometimes do that with a little blanket rolled up underneath my hips, just to kind of open that space a little. So there are different yoga pose restoratives that you might combine with this kind of practice. But at least lie down, because then the body can release a little bit. It's not held in its normal fashion. And just take your kind awareness there. And when it's too much, then leave. Seriously, go somewhere else. Try again another time. So little moments at a time. Can't, you know, it's not all at once. So I did this over a period of years in lots of different ways, on retreat, at home, until I actually felt like I could see. And then there was color, there was some light, there was some movement. And that's when my body started to transform in that area. That with other things, but that was part of what started it. So we never know what we can do if we just take the time to be kind to ourselves and spend a little time inside. A little at a time, a little at a time. Don't rush. Please don't rush. It's not worth it. It just gets us scared. We don't want to go back. But just a little, and then a little, and then a little, and hopefully with others, with someone who can be with you. So we don't want to traverse every different landscape by ourselves. We are in this together. So this series hopefully has been of benefit in one way or another. So I know we did a lot of different practices. Some that you might have been familiar with and some maybe not, or that we did them in different ways. And the key to anything is repetition, is not to think about it, but actually do it and do it over and over and over again. And then it's yours. So if and when you're ready to do any of the practices again, I hope you will. And you'll see what transpires, what transforms. And hopefully now that you've gotten to know each other a little bit, you can share with each other if you want, and you can certainly reach out to me. So I'm not intending to give you, you know, offer these practices and then say, see you later. Not at all. In fact, that's not interesting to me, because what's interesting to me is how you digest, assimilate, question, live with, experiment. It's fascinating to see how we work with similar practices in different ways. And if I can support you, I will, for sure. But all of the practices that we've done together, I do myself a lot and have for decades. So they're not new, they're not conceptual, but they're tried and true things that have really, really supported me. And I've been teaching for a long time too. So I appreciate your joining me for this, especially since it's online, you know, not always the easiest thing to do on a Sunday or whenever you're watching, listening to it. But that says a lot about you, about your heart, about your willingness, about your courage, about your path. So I hope you can really sense that and appreciate that in yourself. Because these kinds of practices, any practice, really takes some courage to, open our eyes. Not that everything is something we don't want to see, but we have to be willing to try, to look, be aware. So may they be of benefit to you in innumerable ways. And may you walk out whatever those benefits are into the world in a way that nobody even really needs to know, but they can sense. So the way we are in the world, even online, resonates. We sense each other, we sense the world. So just know that you can remember, project your electromagnetic field of your heart at least 3 feet away. I think I'm arrogant enough to think mine goes at least 10. But, you know, just play around with projecting your heart and see how people respond. You don't have to tell them. But we know certain things from science now, certain things are being proven. You know, we know about neuroplasticity, neuromagnetic electric fields, however that is supposed to be said more correctly, electroneuromagnetic fields. So all of these newer fMRIs and some of the tests that are showing things and proving what we already experience is great. Use it as validation for your own mind, and if you're sharing them with others. It's nice to have validation. But the real true validation comes from within, always. Always, always, always. What you sense is real. What you experience is real. How you work with yourself is the most important aspect. So may you be awake and aware and kind and loving to yourself as an expression, as an individual, very unique expression of being human. That's what we all are in our wonderfully quirky, different ways. We're expressions of what it's like to be a human being right now. So if we can appreciate that about ourselves, It's not about getting things right or wrong or doing it the right way or the wrong way, or as it's been taught to us before, but about really following our own instincts and hearts and inner wisdom. And that takes time. You know, it's not instant, maybe, but we can develop that. We can cultivate the faith in ourselves. So I wish that for you. Thank you. To be continued in one way or another, I hope. Well, welcome to turn your mic on and say goodbye if you like.